Well, it's been said that the current state of reality TV in Australia is so dire that watching grass grow or paint dry may, in fact, actually be more interesting. Well, the Norwegians are way ahead of us on this. You've probably heard of slow TV. It's a new kind of reality television experience that kicked off in Norway in 2009 when a 7-hour and 16-minute train journey from Bergen to Oslo was broadcast by the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation.
Vi kjører inn til Arna stasjon. We are now approaching Arna station.
1.2 million people tuned in at least one point, which is not bad given that Norway's population is only about 5 million. Since then, slow TV has proved it's no flash in the pan. It's become a serious phenomenon. Follow-ups such as a trip down the Norwegian coast, National Firewood Night, National Knitting Night have all become permanent fixtures on the television calendar and watched by millions. But it doesn't end there. Last month, the BBC announced it's following suit and has commissioned three slow TV programs. So what on earth have the Norwegians tapped into? Espen Utreberg is a professor of media and communication at the University of Oslo, and he joins us now from Oslo. Welcome, Espen.
Thank you.
Now, describe Bergen's Barnen minute for minute for us, because it wasn't just one camera looking over the train driver's shoulder.
No, there were a number of cameras in the train and a small production unit as well. So in addition to the main cameras, which provided you views from the driver's seat forward and to the sides, there were intermittent small sequences with mainly with interviews with people traveling. The interviews had a very kind of an everyday feel, you know, chatting with people on the way. But of course, the bulk of the broadcast was real-time images of the view from the train.
Which we should say is absolutely stunning. I mean, it's stunning imagery.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as if you're just looking out at empty fields or suburban backlocks or industrial sites.
It's also a kind of a heartland of Norway. You pass the mountains between the largest and the second largest cities. So this is a landscape that means a lot to Norwegians, one that kind of resonates with lots of what's common to us historically and culturally.
In 2011, along came another trip after the smashing success of the train trip, and this was also epic in scale, and it smashed the Guinness Book of Records for the world's longest documentary. Tell us about Hurtigruten minute for minute.
The Hurtigruten is a coastal liner which traverses most of the Norwegian coastline, or at least large parts of it, and includes the most famous and scenic fjord parts. And it takes like a week each way, more or less. The way that the train connected Norway overland, this liner did the same for the coastal areas. And it's a kind of a legend there. I mean, I grew up myself in North Norway, and the sound of the tooting Hurtigruta in the afternoon was this fixture, this regular reminder of the coast and of the larger world. And it was as such that it was used also in this TV format.
So over something like 6 days and 134 hours, I think, the journey of the boat down the coast was followed by cameras. I think it was more sophisticated this time, 12 cameras on board, including one fixed to the bow, which could move about.
Yeah.
What was extraordinary was the response from the people of Norway as it came down.
What happened with the Hurtigruta broadcast was it became a kind of an occasion for public gathering, and larger and larger crowds would appear. More and more people waving, more and more people with flags, more and more people kind of interestingly using the broadcast to hold up placards saying stuff like "Happy Birthday, Mum." So they actually used the broadcast to communicate with each other. You know, as the thing progressed, there were like marching bands when the boat arrived, and mayors, and you know, it became this festive event where, you know, half the town was gathered.
This is a total reimagining of television.
There's something about this genre that kind of reminds you of how condensed and hectic and in your face other mainstream television is. The international diet of television in competitive, mature markets is very similar from country to country, but it's a product just of the fact that these are very competitive markets that kind of vie for a type of public interest that impels TV people to try and deliver loads of action and very condensed narratives. The result is kind of samey. The fact that this is something else kind of throws an interesting light back on the rest of the stuff that we're offered. It's just the slowness. It's a very simple thing, you know? But the common denominator is take it easy, let stuff unfold in real time, let go of the thought that you have to produce some in-your-face moment or narrative all the time.
So it's a relaxation, it's escape from the fast-paced world, it's a communing with others. That does seem to be quite an important part of it, as well as reaffirming some aspects of cultural identity. And I know that Thomas Hellam, who's one of the producers who has worked on these productions, I guess, events, he says that it taps into a Norwegian love of nature. Do you think it is a Norwegian thing?
Yeah, it would be kind of weird to say that Norwegians are unique in that we really appreciate nature. That would be kind of strange. There is certainly a love of nature here, and there is a love of traditional life. Of course, you have that in all sorts of places. In Norway, there's also a very strong tradition of various kinds of trekking, of being in nature as an everyday thing and just as a matter of routine. So I would emphasize more the everydayness of contact with nature, which just has to do with the fact that the country is mostly rocks, and there's really lots of it, and just 5 million people.
Now, obviously, the success has been followed up with a number of others, and I mentioned there was Knitting Night, where wool was followed from the sheep's back to be made into a jumper. Another night, there was National Firewood Night, and that was about the best way to chop wood, stack wood, light a fire, and then, of course, the delight of a fire itself. Salmon swimming upstream. What was it like to watch these things?
Oh, I personally enjoy it enormously. But of course, it's very different as for any genre. Some like it, some don't. I enjoy them a little bit like I would enjoy a nice view when I was like out on a Sunday or actually on the boat myself. And indeed, I have traveled a lot with Hurtigruta. It's a landscape that means something to me. It has something familiar to it in addition to something beautiful. So you can have a meet-up with your own experiences and your own history and the landscapes that mean something to you. The whole notion that you're watching grass grow is just like, I understand the quip, I understand the initial reaction, but it doesn't really grasp what's interesting here. I'm not enormously keen on the flag waving and the occasion making. When you sit down and you take your time and you start looking at what seems still, everything turns out to be a million small movements of color and shading and small things happening with the wind. And the whole notion that this is boring is just an initial thing. And that's it insofar as there are deeper lessons here. There's something there.
Some people would say that this is not exactly new. In fact, Andy Warhol did this a couple of times. One notable one is his slow movie Sleep from 1963, which showed the poet John Giono sleeping for 5 hours and 20 minutes. And I know there's been a tradition with this with train journeys as well. And I've even heard recordings on record of famous train journeys across the UK. So it does have a history. Is it, in a way, a utilisation of an older form?
Oh, definitely. It's really interesting that one of the first things that people with cameras did was they went somewhere far away and they just started the camera and they rolled. Perhaps they did kind of a slow panoramic movement from left to right. But essentially, much of it was this very stately, slow documentation of somewhere really interesting and somewhere significant but far off that you could sort of take back and show people. So we're kind of touching on something very basic that has to do with recording reality as moving images and showing them.
Now the phenomenon is being tested in other markets. British Airways has apparently made the seven-hour train trip available in flight. And as I mentioned, the BBC is doing its own version. BBC Four goes slow. They've commissioned a two-hour canal boat journey down one of Britain's historic waterways. Also a three-hour journey behind the scenes of the National Gallery. And then several 30-minute ones of celebrating traditional crafts, the making of a chair, of a classic steel knife, etc. This is very similar to what you guys have been up to.
Oh, yeah. Of course, the Norwegian media writes a lot about this currently because we're a small country and it's not really often that anyone else pays attention. Certainly when it comes to television, we've always been importers of ideas and very, very seldom have we been exporters of anything that has to do with television. The Travel Channel in the US has picked up some of this as well. And certainly the international interest in this phenomenon is unlike anything really that I can remember of Norwegian television and its relation to the world.
This is an extraordinary expression of a national cultural imagination, and thank you so much for explaining some of it to us, Espen.
My pleasure. It's amazing that people that far away take an interest. We enjoy this in Norway.
Well, I think we may well enjoy it here. That's Espen Rytrudberg. He's a professor of media and communication at the University of Oslo with a research interest in television and television development. And for the record, we asked ABC TV management and, as yet, no plans.